provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about defense tech in CW 40 and 41, Frenis is a B2B market research company that equips product and strategy teams with market and competitive intelligence across the defense industry. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission today really is to distill what's happening in defense tech. We're looking just at the key LinkedIn posts from the last couple of weeks. That's CW 40 and 41.
Yeah, it's definitely a busy time. And looking at the source material, you can really see some clear strategic movements emerging, especially in Europe and among allies.
Right. What are the big ones you're seeing?
Well, three things really stand out. A huge push towards autonomy, machine speed. Then a real focus on hardening that counter UAS perimeter.
Okay.
And finally, a big drive to accelerate industrial capacity, you know, making sure everything worked together better. Air, land, sea, space, interoperability.
That counter UAS piece, the hardening the perimeter, that seems like a good place to start. Yeah. The sources definitely confirm uncrewed aerial systems, UAS, they're just central now.
Absolutely central. ISR drones, tactical UAVs, they're fundamental to land warfare concepts we're seeing discussed.
And that means, well, a desperate need for constant surveillance.
Yeah.
And making that kill chain faster.
Exactly. And the tactical response, counter UAS or CUAS, it's evolving incredibly fast.
Yeah.
It's not just one magic bullet anymore.
No.
No. The consensus is really about layered approaches, you know, blending detection, AI for classification, different kinds of interceptors. But the threat isn't just military now. We've seen that quite clearly.
You mean civilian infrastructure?
Precisely. National security folks are flagging urgent CUAS gaps right here at home. Benjamin Wolba mentioned that Munich airport shutdown.
Oh, yeah, I saw that unauthorized drone, right? Canceled over 30 flights.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of disruption, it's becoming a real security headache for civilian areas, not just battlefields.
So the market's responding.
Oh, definitely. Lots of tech being thrown at it. We saw Lockheed Martin talking up their Sanctum counter UAS system, AI-driven.
Sanctum, right.
Right.
What makes that stand out?
Well, multiple sources pointed to it as embodying what's needed now. Smart AI, flexible, open architecture system.
Open architecture, that keeps coming up.
It does. And layered defense, you know, tackling threats at different ranges, different altitudes, it ticks all those boxes.
And the investment must be huge. Gitarth Rajneesh Vaishnav shared that Drone Shield news.
The new $13 million R&D place in Adelaide shows real strategic growth commitment.
Raven Dekker was pushing for urgent capabilities in the Netherlands, too. It feels very immediate, this need.
It is immediate. But the really interesting part, I think, is the tactical innovation. Ivane Maizaya introduced this concept, the Bait Interceptor Drone.
B-Bay. What's that?
It's a compact drone launched from a larger carrier UAV. The idea is it autonomously goes after massed aerial threats.
Like those cheap drone swarms, Shahed types.
Exactly like those. It's designed specifically to counter that kind of threat.
Which takes us beyond just the tech, right? There's an economic angle.
A huge one. That's the core insight, really. Why is BAT potentially so important?
Okay, well,
affordability and speed? Right now, you see countries using incredibly expensive fighter jets, $50 million maybe.
But you've done a $20,000 drone.
Exactly. It's unsustainable. The BAT concept offers an automated economical counter. It replaces that ridiculously costly practice. That economic shift is, I think, going to define the next wave of air defense.
Makes sense. Speed and economics driving things. But Tom Adams brought up a complication, the legal side.
Yes. The regulatory hurdles.
He pointed out the legal risks with unauthorized CUAS tech, like public safety bodies, airports, local police. They need clear authority to actually use detection and mitigation tools.
Otherwise, you get unintended consequences, legal challenges could actually slow down progress.
Yeah. That tension, the need for machine speed versus human constraints, legal frameworks, that actually leads perfectly into our next theme, doesn't it?
It really does. AI, autonomy, and software, the race for speed.
Okay, let's get into this. Jonas Singer had that stark quote, latency kills.
Yeah, pretty blunt. The argument is simple. You modern combat is too fast for human delay. You can't afford to have a human in the loop for every decision if you expect to survive complex fights.
So the human moves where?
On the loop, that's the goal. Machines operate within rules set by humans encoded, lawful constraints like geofences, confidence levels.
Hey.
And then they execute lethal action at machine speed. The human provides the intent and the boundaries, but the machine acts instantly.
We saw some real tech examples of this. Daniel Kalfas presented that Airbus framework, RELEGSIM, at the NATO CA2X2 forum.
Right, using deep reinforcement learning.
Explain that a bit. What's it doing for operational planning?
Okay, so essentially it lets the AI simulate thousands, millions of options, combat paths, resource allocations, way faster than a human team could. It learns by trial and error and simulation, rewarding good outcomes.
So instead of weeks planning, it's moments.
Pretty much. And Harold Mannheim confirmed this isn't just theory anymore. Airbus is a major partner for the German Bundeswehr's AI transformation. They're focused on scaling this up, moving from prototypes to actual series production, integrating it end to end.
And this push for speed isn't just like a nice to have. It's being framed as strategically vital.
Absolutely vital. Sandra Lossmann echoed the German defense minister, Boris Pistorius, saying, "The future is unmanned. Why? Cost efficiency, sure, but also human capital efficiency, using people smartly and just decisive effectiveness."
Makes sense.
And Benjamin Tallis made a strong point, too. Democracies need AI-driven autonomous mass capabilities to effectively defend against authoritarian states who might not have the same constraints on human costs.
And you need the hardware for that vision. Mm-hmm. Aviv Bar-Zohar and Richard Benton highlighted the Nomad UAV family from Lockheed Martin and Sikorsky.
Yeah.
VTL Hybrid Electric.
And critically, open architecture.
There it is again. Why is that so key here?
Because open architecture enables that speed and mass we're talking about. It means you can plug in third-party software more easily, upgrade faster, scale configurations for different missions, ISR, strike, logistics, land, sea.
Gotcha. It connects the software potential directly to adaptable hardware.
Exactly. Which bridges nicely into our third theme. Industrial policy, procurement, and resilience. How do we actually build and pay for all this stuff at scale?
Okay, where do we start? Partnerships.
Strategic partnerships are huge. Preston Feinberg flagged that big UK Palantir deal, up to $1.5 billion investment.
And Palantir setting up their European HQ in the UK.
Right. It frames defense deals not just as buying kit, but as engines for national economic and tech growth.
But is growth the same as resilience?
Okay.
Christoph Donique brought up Rheinmetall's massive expansion, $63 billion backlog, new factories popping up.
And he asked the crucial question. Does just being efficient make you strategically resilient? Well, if you centralize everything into giant, super efficient factories, you create single points of failure. His argument is Europe needs a balanced, distributed industrial sites. Procurement tied to sovereignty metrics, not just sheer volume. Geographical spread matters.
You can't talk about European defense industry now without talking about Ukraine. Oleksandr Lysakov announced something big.
A major turning point, yeah. Ukraine shifting from just defense production for themselves to becoming an exporter, projecting $35 billion in production next year.
Wow. With plans for export hubs in the EU, US, Middle East.
It's forcing a rethink in the West. Martin Joinsar and Mark A. Whitefeld were clear. Supporting Ukraine effectively means localization, speed, constant feedback loops.
And Joinsar had that really provocative call about procurement.
Oh yeah, that was striking. He said Western procurement offices need to change their processes. Start treating things like drones and sensors as consumables or a service.
Not like a tank you buy for 20 years.
Exactly. Treat them like consumables or a service.
Yeah.
That's a massive mindset shift for traditional defense bureaucracies.
What does that practically mean? Treating assets as a service.
It means you might buy, say, operational hours or performance outcomes, not just the physical drone. The contractor keeps updating the software, that's the service, and the hardware is maybe seen as more expendable, replaceable quickly with the latest version.
So it prioritizes ongoing improvement over waiting for the perfect final product.
Precisely. Rapid iteration. And to help bridge that gap, Denis Sviatokum mentioned the Nordar Nexus initiative.
What's that doing?
Connecting Ukrainian companies with Danish support programs, helping them get NATO certification, basically speeding up their integration into the wider European defense industry.
And that integration focus shows up in national plans too. Pascal M. noted Denmark buying more F-35s and collaborative combat aircraft.
The drone wingmen, yeah.
Specifically to boost NATO interoperability and support local industry like Terma and Multicut. It all ties together.
It does. Which brings us maybe to the last theme, specialization within domains, sea, air, PNT.
Okay, let's start underwater. Seems like a lot happening there. Amelia Gould announced Helsing acquiring Blue Ocean Marine Tech Systems.
Right, bringing Helsing's AI focus together with expertise in autonomous underwater platforms to counter nefarious subsea activity.
That sounds serious.
It is. And we're seeing coordinated European efforts, too. Jürgen Skrabek detailed the European Defense Agency's 2026 goals. Underwater domain awareness, uncrewed maritime systems, seabed protection.
And they're using a modular approach.
Yeah, a pragmatic, minimum viable unit concept built around a standard 20-foot shipping container.
Why the container standard? What makes that so useful?
Logistics, pure and simple. If your complex sensor system or drone launcher fits in a standard container, you can deploy it rapidly using existing global infrastructure, cargo ships, military transports, whatever. Cuts deployment time dramatically.
Speed and standardization again. Same in the air domain.
Seems like it. Paul Lemo highlighted Lockheed Martin firing up their SPY-7 radar for the Aegis vessels, another step in modular radar tech. And Dr. Dennis G. mentioned Vectis focusing on air power integration, making sure different fleets, especially fifth gen like the F-35, can work together seamlessly.
Okay, and finally, that critical bit of infrastructure, PNT.
Positioning, navigation, and timing. Absolutely crucial. Eliza Drasny's confirmed it's a major focus in the Baltics, strengthening PNT resilience.
Because GPS can be denied or spoofed.
Exactly. In a conflict, you have to be able to operate without relying solely on GPS. So you see civil tech, like from Safran Electronics and Defense, being transferred into military PNT solutions. It's driving that civil-military tech transfer.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together. What we've seen across LinkedIn these past 2 weeks suggests defense tech is really shifting around three core ideas.
I think so. First, speed, driven hard by AI and autonomy. Second, mass, fueled by affordable drones and the urgent need for counter-drone tech. And third, industrial resilience, with Ukraine acting as a catalyst and a broader push for smarter EU industrial policy.
And thinking about that resilience and the procurement changes needed, Britta Jacobs' point about modular software-defined systems.
Yeah, that they're per se never fully developed. Oh. That thinking completely rejects the old way of doing things, waiting for that perfect, finished, gold standard system.
Right. Which leaves a really interesting question for you, the listener, to think about. What big established defense systems out there right now are maybe being held back by that old demand for a gold standard solution?
Yeah, and how different could they be, how much faster, how much more effective if we truly embraced a software-first, service-based approach where improvement is constant? That's the transformation happening right now.
Definitely something to consider. If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on ICT and Tech Insights, Health Tech, Cloud, Digital Products and Services, Artificial Intelligence, and Sustainability in Green ICT. Thank you for joining us. Remember to subscribe.